And I think we have Evan Marinofsky on the line now, Quinn.
Perfect. So let's welcome him in, Evan Marinofsky of Turner Media and on the Bruins beat for CLNS Media. Evan, welcome back into the Sports Exchange. Always a pleasure to have you, my friend.
I'm happy to be back, fellas. How have you guys been?
Good. Oh, hanging in there, doing our darndest for sure. How about yourself?
I'm good. Trying to stay warm. It's that time of year, but it's been good. With all the Bruins hockey, I mean, there's so many things to talk about, which I imagine we'll get to in a bit. But yeah, no, tons of stuff going on.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the Bruins staying hot, certainly keeping the area hot. And I have to ask, Evan, right off the top, this win streak has been really incredible, but they really hit their first true patch, I think, of adversity in just a 7-1 beatdown at the hands of the Canes, and the response has been excellent since then. What do you kind of take from that loss and the response to the loss in terms of kind of the intestinal fortitude, really, of this team?
Yeah, what I take from the wins after, they've both been gutsy, right? You have the game against Washington where Anton Bleed gets hurt, Brad Marchand looks like he's out long-term, and, you know, they find a way to win. That's a rough game, and then they have, you know, the Winnipeg game where they do kind of the same thing, right? Marchand comes back, and he talks after the game, and that's kind of a motivational booster, right? This guy looks like he had a severe shoulder injury, and he's back out there the next night. He talked about it after the game. So I think the gutsiness of the last two games have been huge in the fact that it's like those are games that you might look at and say, well, one of those might be a loss. You get blown out 7-1 by the Hurricanes. I mean, that game, what I attribute that to was they just didn't show up. It was kind of like the Vegas game they had right before the COVID shutdown, where they just flat out didn't show up. There wasn't any fight. Tough night for Rask. I wouldn't say he was the sole reason, but you know, maybe would have liked a save or two in there somewhere. But I think, you know, the gutsiness of the last two games have been good, and I was surprised. I mean, again, like I saw that 7-1 beatdown and said, "Oh man, don't you know that streak they had might have been just a streak," but they're proving that it isn't because the last two games have been so much better than that loss.
What do you think it says about Marchand, just him coming back? It seemed like Cassidy essentially had just ruled him out, as well as Bleed, like in that press conference the day before, and suddenly he's back on the ice and just going all out. What do you think it says about him leading this team?
It's a big thing. I mean, and again, it's funny because since it's Marchand, it's almost not surprising, but in the same sense, anybody doing that is huge. I mean, that is such a tone setter for everything. I mean, the guy looked like he did something to his collarbone. I don't know if you guys saw the video, him trying to celebrate a goal on the bench. He couldn't lift his shoulder above his head or his arm above his head. I don't know, like, how you recover from that in 2 days and just magically play great the next game, but I don't know. It says a lot, and he's clearly one of the leaders on this team, and it really kind of cements him. I don't know if it cements him. We already knew this, but his standing in the Boston sports kind of place, right? I mean, he's such a star at this point, and you know, not just among, you know, obviously we talk about, oh, he's, you know, the best left winger in hockey. I mean, you could make an argument he's, you know, arguably the biggest star in Boston sports-wise. I mean, obviously you have Jason Tatum and you have Patrice Bergeron, and now you got Mac Jones in there, and you know, you've got Xander Bogaerts and Rafi Devers. But I mean, the gutsiness of Marchand to come back from that injury, and just the way he's been this team's MVP now for a few years. I got some hate, actually. I put out on Twitter that, you know, if he's out for a long time, you're going to see how and why he's been the Bruins MVP for a while. And people were like, well, what about Bergeron? And it's like, Bergeron is, everyone knows he's valuable. He's the best at what he does, but Marchand is just like the motor. And I think, you know, again, they're lucking out because it doesn't seem like he's missing any time.
So to follow up that, you mentioned their MVP. Certainly feels like the team MVP. But I'm just interested here because this kind of got floated a little bit early in the season. And, you know, there's some pretty, you know, giant names to kind of overcome in this. But, you know, even allowing for a little maybe Boston bias, should Brad Marchand be factoring into the MVP conversation in the league right now? Is this guy a serious Hart Trophy contender?
I mean, I think he is. I think he definitely factors in. I don't think he wins it. I think he, as you said, I think he absolutely should factor in. I mean, you look at where the Bruins are, the lineup issues they've had throughout the year, you know, overcoming some bad play at the start of the season. he's been the guy. I mean, I think you look at just his play in all zones, right? I mean, you know, offensively, we know what he can do, but defensively, he's so effective and on the penalty kill and all those things that, yeah, I think he absolutely should. But again, it kind of comes back to, like, you know, you got Ovechkin right now with 58 points in 42 games and Draisaitl. A lot of those voters, A, have anti-Marchand bias, and B, just kind of place a premium on points. And so that is sort of the tough part. But yeah, I think he absolutely should factor in. I don't think it's quite the level of Artemi Panarin. I think Panarin was 19-20 when he was kind of carrying the Rangers. Marchand's not carrying the Bruins. Right. But it feels like as far as Marchand goes, the Bruins go. So I think he absolutely should be a guy that we're, at the end of the year, saying, hey, he's someone who should be getting Hart votes, as he has in past years, and I think he should be getting more this year. It would be really cool to see him finish top three at some point in his career, just given where he came from and kind of what his expectations were initially when he kind of first started out here. But yeah, going back to your question, he absolutely should get Hart Trophy votes this year. And I don't know, it's an interesting question. I'm going to think about that one, where I think he'll end up, you know, if he could be top five this year. Because there's a lot of guys putting up, you know, a lot of points. Because another guy, this is interesting, another guy you got is Nazem Kadri out in Colorado, who's notoriously kind of a hated player. And he is just doing crazy numbers. I'm very curious to see what he gets for Hart Trophy candidacy this year. But yeah, Marchand should absolutely get a lot of looks for it.
Well, by now we all know he was snubbed from the All-Star game, and we were talking about this with Connor Ryan last week. He thinks it's just because the NHL is trying to do what the MLB does, which is kind of just pick a player from every team, get them all involved, even if they aren't really as worthy. What do you think was the ultimate reason?
Oh, they do. I mean, I think that's the whole point to it. You look at the lineups and on each division, there's guys who'd be like, well, who even is that? Like, who is that guy? And that's the thing, and I think that's what's unfortunate is, you know, Ottawa shouldn't have an all-star. Buffalo shouldn't have an all-star. Like, you can go down, you know, those teams, and nothing against them, but, you know, even Nathan MacKinnon said, I think he said something like, you know, when I was an all-star, and I think it was either 2016 or 2014, I think it was 2016, he's like, I shouldn't have been an all-star. You know, I was not worthy. Our team wasn't good enough. The Bruins, I think Dom Lucison of The Athletic did a thing where he kind of put out the all-star teams as they should have been. And the Bruins have four all-stars right now. Pastrnak, Bergeron, Marchand, and McAvoy. Those are the four. I think at the very least it should be Marchand and Bergeron. And I'm surprised Marchand wasn't even put up for the last man in thing.
Yeah.
And again, I think we all go back to, like, do we place a lot of, you know, Do we all look forward, you know, are we all dying to watch the All-Star game? Is that, like, you know, not particularly, but it is an honor for guys to get, and it should be something that's taken a little more seriously. So, yeah, I think it comes down to, you know, the league wants, you know, guys from every team. They want, you know, Senators fans to watch the All-Star game just as much as a Penguins fan or a Lightning fan. So I think it kind of comes back to that. But yeah, I would love to see the league go back, because the league did a good job a few years ago in transitioning to a 3-on-3 format, because it used to be, it was awful when it was just 5-on-5, and the 3-on-3 thing was cool. I would just love to see them be like, hey, we're going to pick the best players. We're not, you know, picking by team, you know, not every team gets an all-star, you know, we're going to just pick the best guys. That would be awesome. But hopefully, I mean, I don't, maybe this is a year after this year they change it, given the backlash, but, I mean, guys have been getting snubbed for years now. It's just kind of that Marchand is a huge snub this year.
I agreed. And I'll say, you know, as much as it is an honor, sitting in my shoes just, you know, as a fan of the team and looking forward to, you know, the second half and what this team can do, I think I'd rather Marchand have the chip on his shoulder of not making it than him actually get the honor and have that kind of in his post-career portfolio. So, I'm all right with him not making it as long as he comes out, you know, like a bat out of hell after the All-Star break. But I want to ask Evan.
And he gets some rest. And he gets some rest.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Which is not bad.
No.
Especially with the
winners of 11 of 13 here for the Bruins. And I'm interested, you know, whether it be Tuukka Rask's return, the line change from Coach Cassidy, or anything else. What do you attribute as the biggest attributor to this success, I guess, you know, to repeat myself, but what do you think is the biggest reason the Bruins have had this surge here coming out of their COVID layoff?
I think, honestly, you know, there are two things I look at. Rask's thing is helpful, but I don't put that with the two that I'm about to mention. The line, switching up the top six, I think, is the biggest one, right? That was like that clicked immediately. Smith has looked great with Marchand and Bergeron. Taylor Hall's looked great with Pasternak. And you've had Eric Halla in the middle. That's worked, right? And you're seeing the Hall-Pasternak chemistry. It's so good right now. But also, another thing is the secondary scoring. You're getting goals from the third and fourth lines. And, you know, before, you know, I haven't looked at the stats in total for the games, but halfway through, Curtis Lazar had like 6 points in seven games. Bleed had 6 points in seven games. So for the first time all year, again, I said this before the season, you know, people were like, oh, Krejci's gone. How are they going to, you know, replace him? And it's kind of like what they did in Moneyball. Remember, I assume you guys have seen Moneyball, where they're trying to replace, you know, Damon and Giambi, and it's like, well, we can't replace those guys directly. We kind of have to do it. We have to kind of aggregate it. And I kept saying, you know, if they get depth scoring from Eric Halla and Nick Foligno and Thomas Nosek and guys on the third and fourth line where they haven't in past years, they're going to be more spread out and they're going to do better, even though they're going to be without, you know, 70-point David Krejci. Now, obviously, through the start of the year, they didn't get depth scoring, and they weren't very good. They were a mediocre team. But now they're getting that secondary scoring, and you're seeing the winnings. You're seeing them do well, and I think that's the biggest thing. You know, the emergence of Oscar Steen, and, you know, Jake DeBrusque has played a little bit better in his past few games. The fourth line, before Bleed got injured, was coming together. And, you know, I think Nick Foligno can slot in well as, you know, kind of a person going in for Anton Bleed. So things are working on that bottom six, and it shouldn't be overlooked because, again, when they get, you know, the biggest issue with this team when they go to the playoffs every year, it feels like, you know, teams shut down that first line and that's it. And then that's the series. Like, they shut down the Bergeron line and that's it. Now you've got potentially a much better third and fourth line and maybe even a second line, you know, more balanced at least, to now where teams can't just shut down the first line and say, all right, well, we won the series, you know, no worries now. Now you've got to worry about, you know, is Curtis Lazar going to pot one in? Is Jake DeBrusque going to, you know, grind one in? Those things. Now, Jake DeBrusque, I don't know if he'll be here for the postseason. But for the rest of the guys, Oscar Steen, you're getting that secondary scoring, and it's been huge for them. And there's enough guys where it's not, you know, you're not relying on Oscar Steen to put up a point every game or Curtis Lazar to put up a point every game. You know, if you can get, you know, every few games some production from them, you're good. And I think those guys are trending that direction, which is a very good thing for the Bruins.
Having seen how things have shaken out since Rask has made his comeback, how do you see the goaltending situation playing out the rest of the year?
I see it being what it's been in past years, where it's kind of balanced. You know, it's back and forth. You know, I think it'll be similar to every other game. Neither of them right now are really separating, you know, from each other, which makes sense. I mean, again, I think, you know, Rask had a good first game back against the Flyers. You also have to take into account it was the Flyers, you know, a team that's dreadful right now. You know, tough one against the Hurricanes. You know, shaky to start against the Jets, but then, you know, came through and was fine. So, again, you know, he's someone who, you know, has played now three games after playing none in like 8 months. So I think they're going to balance it. I think it's going to be sort of 50-50 down the stretch with all the games they have, too. I think that's the other thing is, like, they have so many games that, I mean, why would you want to ride a guy like crazy when you can put a guy in who's, you know, almost as good in Ullmark or something like that? So I think they're going to do what they've done in past years where they split it. I could easily see a situation where one guy gets hurt or one guy comes down with COVID, obviously just brings Swayman up. And I think it's also good because, you know, Swayman can develop a bit down in Providence. I think that's ultimately, you know, not a terrible thing. He's still a young kid. You know, you can still develop down there. So I think they'll just balance it. I think that really comes down to it. I mean, I don't see them diverting. I don't see, even if Ullmark goes on a tear, I don't see them being like, oh, we're just not going to play Rask. You know, we're just going to ride Ullmark. So, yeah, they'll balance it. That's what I would assume.
Barring injury or COVID, have we seen the last of Swayman this year?
Barring injury or COVID, well, I mean, if if one of them doesn't, you know, if Rask or Ullmark severely struggles, then I think you'll see Swayman. And Sweeney had said that when he sent down Swayman, because Swayman's first thing to him saying was, you know, do I get the net if those guys don't perform? So, yeah, I mean, if Ullmark, you know, goes six straight games with, you know, three or more goals allowed or something like that, then, yeah, you could absolutely see Swayman back up here. I think that's the only way. I don't think they just say, oh, we're going to give him, you know, start against Arizona to be nice. You know, I don't think there's any of that. But I do think that if one of them struggles, absolutely you could see him again.
So let me ask, you mentioned Oscar Steen. He's been really a bright spot recently here for the Bruins. This is a little bit maybe more nuts and bolts than, you know, for the casual conversation. But I'm interested. Oscar Steen's emergence seems to be directly correlative, at least as far as Cassidy says, to the waiver wire move for Carson Kuhlman. What do you make of the move for him? Are you okay with the Bruins kind of waving the white flag with Kuhlman?
Yeah, Kuhlman had been a guy who was a really fast skater, hard worker, good in his own zone, but just could never put up the points to stay in the lineup. You know, they tried him a lot of places. They tried him up on the second line. I believe he was even in game 6 and 7 on David Krejci's right side in the 2019 Cup final. They tried him everywhere, and it just never seemed to stick. The Bruins, the one thing they have had in spades the past 4 or 5 years is fringe top six guys who aren't producing, right? They do the little things right, but they don't produce. And they have a lot of those. And it looked like Oscar Steen was going to be one of those guys, and he's fit a lot better, I think, and produced more and kind of brings a little more skill that they're looking for than Kuhlman did. So, yeah, I mean, I think Carson Kuhlman will be a great top nine or fourth line type player in the league. He could be a guy who kind of goes from place to place on 1 to 2 year deals. Teams need that. So I don't think they let, you know, someone incredible go. I think they did the right thing for both sides in the sense that the Bruins really don't have a need for Kuhlman. They have many other forwards. You know, you're struggling to get Trent Frederick time right now. Who knows what happens with DeBrusk? You know, if you trade him for another forward or something like that, then you're adding another forward into the mix. It's hard to tell what they're going to do with him. But, yeah, I mean, this was not a huge loss for them. And good for Kuhlman. I hope he does great in Seattle. I mean, I would imagine he'll have a spot in those lines. That team is pretty freaking bad right now. I think Kuhlman, it was tough because, you know, he showed potential at times, but the production was just never there.
Well, you mentioned DeBrusk in that last point you made. What is his value at this point? It seems like the team's been propping him up as of late. He's starting to pick it up on the ice, make some plays here and there. But what is his true value at the moment?
And if I can jump in just for a second, Evan.
Oh, yeah.
I actually... Brendan, on this point, it's so funny because I wanted to hit on this because I felt like he'd been playing better as of late, but I went back and was looking at the stats, Evan, and from November 29th, I think it was, when he requested his trade, his numbers are now almost identical in splits from before that point and after that point, and it feels like he's been playing a lot better, but the numbers don't bear that out.
Yeah, I think the thing with him is, and this is an interesting thing with DeBrusk, where, like, not only does he go for stretches where he doesn't produce, like, Charlie Coyle will go for stretches where he's pointless, but at the same time, you notice him, right? He's being effective, you know, he's good on the forecheck, he's good at cycling the puck, he's, you know, doing his defensive assignments well, like, all those things. But there are large stretches where you don't really notice DeBrusk in a game, right? You know, the flybys and the you know, maybe lack of effort in some areas. So that's kind of, that adds to the whole thing of, like, oh, Jake DeBrusk played tonight. So it's a weird kind of reality with him, where you're noticing him a lot more lately. He's been working harder. He's you know, better on the forecheck. He's been more effective in these past bunch of games. And yeah, the production hasn't been exactly as great, I think, as they would like it. And it kind of goes back to, he's just an inconsistent player. Like, I think that, and that's why, you know, even though he's been better, I don't know if this has skyrocketed his value a ton. I was thinking they would capitalize on a trade with him with a team that needed a boost up front or wanted to take a chance on a young, exciting-ish forward with the Brusque. But now with the deadline, I mean, the deadline's less than 2 months away now, but it's, we're still closer than we were back in November. You would think that, you know, maybe it's, he's not as enticing as a deal now, but I think he still is a top 10, you know, maybe even top 6 or 7 guy that teams might want to trade for. I mean, if you're in the market for, you know, a third line left winger, or even, you know, a guy with top 6 potential, DeBrusque could be a fit for a team. So I do think that, you know, I don't know if this stretch has helped him a ton with trade value, but it is not, it's never a bad thing for NHL GMs who are thinking, you know, trading for DeBrusque, looking at his, you know, recent stats and recent games and being like, oh, he's been a little bit better, you know, I'm noticing him a lot more. So I don't think it's a bad thing, but I don't think, like, you're going to get now, like, you know, it's not going to be like DeBrusque for, you know, a top six, a definitive top six winger or anything like that. Oh, DeBrusque for Tomas Hertl straight up. But I think you will, you know, you might add an extra draft pick on or something. I'm interested to see what they do with him in a trade. I've always thought, you know, packaging him would be the right move. You know, if you packaged him with other things for something a little bigger, you could get something more. Whereas I'd rather them not go, you know, a one-for-one for another struggling young winger, because it's like, well, they just, if there's any team I don't trust with a struggling young winger, it's the Bruins. So it's like, it's, you know, why would they want another? But I am interested to see what they end up doing with him.
Oh, and I was hoping they'd flip him for McCarr.
Evan. Sorry.
Flip him for who?
No, I just said I was hoping they'd flip him straight up for McCarr.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The last thing I had for you, Evan.
That's what they need. That's what they need.
Oh, no kidding. The last thing I had for you, Evan, though, was a deadline question, and I'm interested because I've seen things starting to get to the realm of, I think Paul Bissonnette actually put it out, you know, package Swayman and go get yourself something big. Just given kind of the structure of the NHL, and combine that with the fact, you know, that the Bruins are sitting in the standings where they are, this is a league where you get to the playoffs and it can be so unpredictable. You've had absolute wagons of teams go down in the first round. You had teams as lowly as the St. Louis Blues win a Stanley Cup. So I kind of ask, as you look ahead to free agency and you look at the available moves to the Bruins, is there realistically somebody out there that they could bring in, or even if it's a series of moves that they could make, that could do anything to move them into a position of being a favorite in the Eastern Conference? And if not, is it really worth giving up a lot at that point?
Yeah, so I think it's a great question. I think someone like Tomas Hertl might, solely because he fits in a slot. You know he's going to be the second line center. Problem is, it's going to take a fair amount to get him. Jacob Chychrun, I don't know if he really sets you above. I mean, I think Chychrun, with his deal and how young and exciting a player he is, you know, he adds, you know, sort of an element that you need in a top four left shot defenseman, a definitive one, right? You know that he is. Like Grizzlick's, you know, fringe and Mike Riley and Derek Forbert are all kind of, you know, fringe. They can do it at times and not all the time. Chychrun is a guy you know is going to be a number one left shot defenseman. But I still think Hertl solidifies a need, a real need that's going to make a real impact. But it goes back to this, and I thought about this for a while, even before Biz brought this up. By far, the most valuable prospect the Bruins have, I don't even think it's close, it's Swayman. It isn't close. I don't, you know, Sednika doesn't have the value he once did. You know, Lysell's younger. Beecher, you know, is in college. But Swayman has a lot of value. The issue is, and you mentioned this, is if you traded Swayman for someone better, right? And you know, for, let's say it was for Hertl or Chychrun or someone like that. Because if you trade Swayman, you obviously give up less. You're out in the, let's say they're out in the first round, right? You're out in the first round. You don't know the future of Rask. You don't know the future of Bergeron. And you're left there without your goalie, who you projected as your franchise guy for the next 10 to 12 years. And that's an issue. Like, that's a real problem. Because, again, I look at it and go, well, the Bruins don't have a plan down the middle for after Bergeron retires. Just like they didn't, the plan on the left side on D, they never really had a plan for, right? I mean, you think about, they lost Krug and Char in the same offseason and have basically replaced them with Mike Riley and Derek Forbert because Vaakanainen and Zboril didn't pan out in time. So they didn't have a plan on the left side. They didn't have a plan on the middle. It seems like they do have a plan in net after Rask goes, right? You know, you have Swayman. They have Ullmark signed for, you know, a little bit of time. So in theory, with Ullmark and Rask, you would think short-term there's technically no need for Swayman. But the problem is you don't know Rask's future. So if you're suddenly without Rask and you've got Ullmark for is he on a four-year deal or five-year deal? Because it's like four years and 4 million or 4 years and 5 million. I forget.
Four and five.
So at 3 years left of Ullmark, you still want to have Swayman. And I think it keeps going back to that, is it's enticing to think about Swayman in a deal, but I don't know if the way the Atlantic is, with the wagon the Panthers are and the experience the Lightning have, and it's only a matter of time until the Maple Leafs finally do break through. It's hard to imagine that I'm willing to, or if I'm the Bruins, I'm willing to sacrifice someone as big to my future as Swayman is for this year. So that's where I keep going back to it. It's not a terrible idea. It's a good outside-the-box, like, debate idea, but I don't know if it's super realistic given the future.
Let me fire a quick couple at you here, Evan, because we're going to carry right to the 6 o'clock hour, and we'll let you go, and I appreciate you for staying on as long as you did. I have one just, like, really, really in the dirt question, and then one that's, you know, maybe more for the casual listener. But first, you mentioned his name, and I've just been keeping an eye on him at Michigan and watching former first-round pick John Beecher, and I'm just interested because, I mean, there's a bunch of studs on that Michigan team, and it just doesn't feel like the numbers have really been there for him. Is that prospect on track to be something for the Bruins, and is he realistically a valuable chip at the deadline?
See, the thing with him is it's tough, because you mentioned all the studs that Michigan has, and that's sort of been an issue in that he kind of gets, you know, there'd be if he was on most other college teams, he would be a, for sure, number one center, or even like a number two, lowest number two center. But the problem is that team is so stacked. He's like an NHL team.
Yeah.
And I've been fortunate to watch a lot of Michigan this year. And, you know, Beecher is a tremendous penalty killer. He's fast. You know, all those things, great defensively. But offensively, he is not as developed or as good as his teammates are, which is why I think he gets lowered in the lineup a bit. And it goes back to, with the Bruins, this is kind of a trend that the Bruins had for a while. They're picking forwards early in the round in drafts, like Trent Frederick and obviously now Beecher, you know, guys who project to be third, fourth line players. And I think with Beecher, even at the time, I remember, as fast as he was, we all kind of were like, well, he projects to be about, you know, at that point, about a third line center, you know, maybe at high, like a second line. So he reminds me, I guess, a little bit, gives you a little Charlie Coyle vibes with that, just given that. So I don't know. We'll see what ends up happening with Beecher, but it should be interesting no matter what.
All right. Well, I'll save my last one for another time. Evan, thank you so much for joining us. As always, just a pleasure having you on.
Of course, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Evan.
All right. That's Evan Marinofsky from Turner Media and on the Bruins beat for CLNS Media. Look out for all his stuff, doing some great work with the NCAA now as well. So until we talk to him again, big thank you to Evan Marinofsky. That's going to do it for hour number one. When we come back, we'll get into our Patriots report card, so don't go anywhere.